Had my eye on you a long time, Doctor. I consider you one of my most valuable long-term investments. And when it comes to my investments, I always do my homework.
All aboard!
And we're back. You're listening to Money Talks. I'm Matt Haynes here with Nick Antonucci, Charlie Holloway. Answering your questions, talking about the stock market and various and sundry things related to your money. Covered a lot today, guys. We got one more segment. This is the last segment of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So let's knock out a few more questions. We got several listener questions this week, so let's do that. We got Don has written us and has a question about zero coupon bonds here. So let me just read Don's question, Nick, for you.
Sure.
So what do you think of individual zero coupon municipal bonds as a vehicle to hold the funds that are allocated to be needed in a specific year? According to your 10-year rule heading toward retirement, these would be dollars that are not qualified, not in a qualified retirement account.
Yes. So in terms of zero coupon bonds and how they're municipal bonds and how they're different than, you know, a traditional coupon paying municipal bond, is just exactly that. You don't get the cash flow throughout the time that you hold it up until maturity. That being said, with a zero coupon bond, it doesn't trade, you know, it usually doesn't trade at any kind of a premium. In fact, it trades at a discount, because in order for you to get any kind of interest, you have to buy it at less than what you're going to get at maturity. So if it matures at par value, let's say $100, you're probably going to pay this thing around $60, $70. So while you're not getting coupon payments over the life of it, you do get a interest payment, call it, at the end when it matures for more than what you paid for it. The problem is, a lot of people, depending on their situation, rely on that income that is generated from coupon payments when they are building a bond ladder. So it's kind of unique to each person's situation. If you need the cash flow, then this obviously isn't a good investment for you.
Sure.
But if you are going to hold it to maturity, you know, maybe this is something you want to consider. Something else, you know, to note with these is, a lot of times you'll get a higher yield on these bonds because you don't have the benefit of receiving that cash flow in between. You're just sitting there waiting until maturity. But one consideration is, if you have to sell this thing before maturity, especially in the low interest rate environment that we're in now, where we expect interest rates to rise in the near term, you know, whether it's next month, whether it's, you know, 3 months from now, whenever, these things stand to get hit pretty hard probably when short-term rates do increase. And that's because when you can now get a higher rate in the market, when interest rates go up, somehow this bond has to compensate you for that. And how's that going to happen? It's going to fall in price. And you don't have any intermediate cash flows to receive. So we would probably not go into zero coupon bonds right now. Wouldn't recommend it for you. But definitely we would recommend building out a municipal bond ladder in your taxable accounts to plan for your spending needs as you see fit.
Good deal. All right. Well, let's get another question then. How about Joe has written and said, each week I dollar cost average $500 into an index fund. This is in addition to my 401k contributions, which are maxed out each year. I currently invest on Monday, and it seems like the market tends to slightly pick up on Mondays, making my weekly purchases more expensive. Is there a statistically best day of the week to make investments? When's the market, when the market's at its lowest? Is there, what kind of data?
Yeah, so this is a pretty interesting question.
So we wouldn't time the market. Let's get that out of the way, right?
That's my first thing.
Yeah, go ahead. All right, I'll let you answer this. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you know, that seems like Monday's the day that the market seems to go up. It's actually quite the opposite. And like Matt said, we're never going to recommend that you try and time the market, because it's a losing game.
Right.
You're just not going to win. So first off, I want to say that, you know, we dug through 10 years of data and put these numbers together, and it's pretty interesting. So if you look from June 24th of 2005 to June 24th of 2015, the best day in terms of average return was Tuesdays. Tuesdays on average returned 10 basis points. The worst day is what you thought was the best day. It was Monday, which on average returns 2 basis points. So you have to consider the time period we looked at, though, 10-year period that included the Great Recession. If you were to take medians instead and kind of remove some of those outliers, it paints a somewhat different picture. The best day when you look at the median is actually Thursday, which has a median return of 12 basis points. The worst day was again Monday, but this time it's flat, so you don't really get any return. So we want to look at a few other things, to dig a little deeper and see which day of the week actually had the highest and lowest returns over the last 10 years. Again, this period includes a Great Recession, so these numbers are going to sound kind of out there, and they should because of the time period we're considering. The biggest one-day return over the last 10 years was a return of 11.58%.
Wow.
And that was on a Monday.
Okay.
And that was October 13th, 2008.
Hmm.
The worst day over the last 10 years, worst single day, was Wednesday, October 15th, 2008, when the market lost 9.03%. But what's interesting here is you look at the best day and the worst day in the last 10 years, they were 2 days apart.
Wow.
The best day of 11% on Monday, the 13th, and the worst day of negative 9.03% on Wednesday, the 15th. So to answer your question in short, you really shouldn't try and time the day of the week that you're purchasing.
Yeah.
It's not going to make a significant difference. If you're talking one day to the next or one day amongst five, very rarely is there going to be a swing meaningful enough to really affect long-term you're earning.
Yeah, exactly, Nick. And you know, when I read this question and when I think about what Joe's asking, I mean, you understand what he's trying to get at here.
Sure.
And why it makes sense. But what encourages me the most about what I see in his question is the first sentence. He's saying each week a dollar cost average $500 into an index fund. It's each week. It's not about which day you're doing it.
Right.
It's about doing it consistently.
Sure.
Right? It's more an issue of consistency. And,
yeah.
And dollar cost averaging, you know, for those of you who don't know what dollar cost averaging is, dollar cost averaging is taking a pool of money and consistently on a regular interval. It could be weekly, could be monthly, could be quarterly, but consistently investing into any investment. In this case, we're talking about an index fund, which goes into a growth type investment like the stock market. But you're consistently investing over a period of time, thereby giving you the benefit of multiple points of entry into the market, right? So the market is volatile by nature. It's going up and down. As opposed to dumping all of your money in at one time, you're getting the benefit of spreading out your entry
right.
points.
So as the market pulls back, you're buying more.
Right.
As the market goes up, you're buying less.
And there's some staggering statistics on it that the impact of it through horrible market cycles, you actually
tremendous.
Can still gain some ground.
That's right.
Versus a
Absolutely.
Lump sum at the beginning of a horrible market cycle, you know, you're of course going to lose
sure.
at whatever the market rate
One
is.
One other thing I want to note here, and it's kind of unique to each situation, but $500 a week, you want to be mindful of transaction costs you're incurring there, because
yeah,
you're paying
right.
at least $10, you know, every week on just a small amount of money, like $500.
That's well, hopefully right. it's a no transaction.
You would hope so.
You would hope. You would hope. Your 401k gives you the opportunity to do this too, right?
Sure.
Dollar cost averaging.
That's what
every
we
time.
All do in our 401k.
Absolutely.
Right? Good friend Bill Murray emailed us this week and said, I heard a prediction from a financial commentator that said we are due for a sharp but short-lived correction in the near future. However, by year end, the S&P 500 will be higher than it is today. There are just too many good things happening in our country today to keep it down. What do you think? I'm 64 and my IRA is 95% invested in equities. Should I raise a little cash in order to take advantage of a correction?
So it sounds just like 1987.
That's right. Yeah. There you go.
Let's hope not, Bill.
Let's say how we answer the last one. Don't try and time the market. That's
right.
kind of the
yeah,
bottom line
go.
Here that I'd go with. And, you know, try and follow the 10-year rule. Really what you want to look at here, does the market look expensive at its current levels? It does look a little expensive compared to its historical average.
Mm-hmm.
But note that it's an average. It's going to trade above that. At some point, it's going to trade below that at some point. But yeah, we are absolutely due for some sort of correction. And you hear people, if you turn on any finance news station, you're going to hear that we're due for a correction because it has been so long. On average, a recession occurs about every 10 years, and a 10% market correction occurs each year, once a year on average. It's been over 4 years since we've had a 10% correction. So statistically, yes. It's time for a correction. When will that happen? Who knows? We also have a 5% market correction 3 times a year on average. And last year in 2014, we had 2. So
okay.
didn't get the full 3 that we have on average. But, you know, you're going to turn on the news and you're going to hear all kinds of things. You're going to have people calling for another recession. You're going to have people like this person saying that, yeah, we're going to have a pullback, but the market's going to rally back up. And that's where the importance of, you know, following what we recommend, the 10-year rule, comes into play. You know, any assets that you need in the next 10 years shouldn't be in the stock market. It should be in fixed income, in bonds. That way you can weather the storm if something like that happens. Also, you can relate to the discussion we just had, dollar cost averaging. If you see an opportunity like this, assuming you have assets you can invest, I don't know if that's your case here, considering you're talking about raising some cash, but if you do have cash on the sidelines and you see a market correction and you're dollar cost averaging, you're going to be able to take advantage of this and benefit from when the market does return to, you know, the level that it was at before or even higher. And to go with what you mentioned, you know, listening on TV, Barron's did a study in December 2009. Respondents called for gains between 5% and 38% when they were asked what they expected the market to do. In fact, the market fell about 7%. So you can hear people all day preach that, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, but the market is full of uncertainty, and you can't really try and play the market and expect that you have a leg up and time it.
And there's so much truth to that, right? And all the statistics show, Nick, and you've talked about a lot of them already and some of the other questions we've answered today, in that, you know, okay, so the concern here is the market may pull back, but
what does that mean?
Well, what does that mean? And the person here says, but, you know, short-lived, it'll be higher than it is today. Listen, yeah. I mean, you can go back, and I don't have the studies at the tip of my finger here, but if you miss the wrong day.
I got it for you right here.
You got the numbers. Yeah. So if you miss the wrong day or 2 days in the market, you miss the return.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's say you invested $10,000 between January 1st, 1994 through December 31st, 2013. If you stayed fully invested, you would have $58,332, a 9.22% annual return.
So that's from what year to what year? That's
20
years.
That's from 1994 to 2013. Yeah, so about 20 years.
So 20 years from 94 to 2013. Okay.
If you miss the 10 best days in the market, so let's say you decide you were going to raise some cash and you were going to sell.
Yep, trying to predict a pullback.
You would have only had a return, annual return of 5.49%, almost cut in half.
Almost cut your return.
By missing 10 days.
Yeah,
if you missed the 20 best days, your return would only be 3%. And if you miss the 60 best days, your return actually goes negative, which shows you how significant it is, how important it is to stay, you know, fully invested and not try and get in and get out when you think
you're talking about
short-term events will happen.
You know, 6, 10, 20, 60 days over a period of 19, 20 years, you just can't pick those.
No.
You really can't.
And if it goes down, the hardest part is when do you buy back in, Bill?
Right.
If it goes down 5%, is that when you say, okay, I guessed right, I'm going to take the free 5%? Do you wait for 10?
You
got to
guess right twice.
I think the getting for anyone that were to guess right on the front end, it's the getting back in that they'll probably
mess
up.
You don't need to guess. That's the point, right? You don't have to guess right once. You got to
guess
right
twice.
Right.
And the odds of doing that are slim. If you want to raise cash, you need to do it because you need to trim a position. Stock doesn't anymore meet a criteria you may have,
right,
and you need to sell it. Those are all good reasons. Maybe take advantage of a tax loss. These are all good reasons to generate cash. Trying to time the market to buy back in is probably not a good reason to raise cash.
This study that we're going off of actually concludes saying that the moments that make a difference in the market represent just 0.03% of that 20-year period.
Wow. Yeah.
It's like the moments in a long marriage. It's that really make it long term. Probably the same percentage.
Coming from the CDFA, certified charter.
He knows it.
Divorce financial.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So
love and finance, they're intertwined.
Money and
you're
life.
Experts
what
on
I've
both.
Always said.
You're an expert on both, right, Charlie?
All right. So let's get another question here. How about Amani from Lithia Springs wants to know, Charlie, here's a good one for you. Who do I call if I have a complaint about my stockbroker, other than Hensler Financial?
We don't get complaints, so this is a hard question.
Well, if you're complaining about your stockbroker, yeah, hey,
right,
call a fee-based financial advisor.
Well, the first thing you want to do is not sit on it for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, act on it. If you have a legitimate complaint, whether it ends up being legitimate or not, go ahead and act on it. So how are you going to act on it? What's the first thing to do? Well, if you've got the contract that you signed, if you're under a management agreement, any sort of legal paperwork, reference that to see was there any wrongdoing. You know, are you complaining because the fees they've been charging you are not what they said? I mean, it could be a whole host of issues that may be spelled out, you know, in plain English in a contract. Then at that point, I'd put a phone call in. You want to put things in writing as well. especially depending on the severity of it. Sure, if you really think this is likely to end in some sort of legal action against the individual or the firm, it's good to document, put anything in writing that you're also going to call for. And you probably get a little bit more response if you call rather than just mail a letter and it just sort of gets, you know, stuck in compliance or in the internal.
So who do they call?
Well, you know, you can call the branch manager. That would be the first. So call the branch of where that individual is employed, not just the 800 number on the website, but call the actual branch. Speak to the branch manager. That would who would be in charge of then addressing it with the individual broker mm-hmm. or the compliance office. So that's the first person to start with.
Right.
If it goes beyond that, then you have to start getting in – you know, contacting the SEC, it just talking about what severity of issue are you dealing with.
Yeah, if you think there's something that's inappropriate that's happened versus you're just not happy with the service.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, good deal. So, but I think the key takeaway there is it's not – don't sit on it, right? I mean,
if you feel something's wrong, you got to
make the phone call. All right. Well, let's take one more call here before we're going to run out of time. We've got Tate from Marietta. I'm interested in Aegon Corp.
Yep.
I dabbled with Primoris Services 2 years ago, selling in November 2014, and saw that Aegon had a lower beta than Primoris. If I buy on this down cycle, I could yield some growth, right?
Aegon, I'll give you a little backstory on who they are. They provide technology and services to protect, rehabilitate, strengthen, and extend the life of infrastructure assets, so like bridges, pipelines, buildings, mm-hmm. Waterfront structures. So it's kind of interesting when you hear that, you know, across our country there's a lot of failing infrastructure, a lot of need for improvement. So it's a good investment idea from that perspective, but stock's about flat year to date, almost down almost 20% over 1 year, and trades right in the middle of its 52-week price range. It trades at a pretty significant premium to its historical averages. So on a valuation basis and what's expected in terms of earnings growth, it just doesn't look cheap at this time, doesn't look too attractive to us. So we'd recommend you stay away from it at this time.
Mm-hmm. Stay away from it. Well, all right. Well, good deal. Well, listen, guys, it's been a slice of heaven being with you again this week. Nick, really appreciate you being on the show with us.
Absolutely.
Good to have you back again. Charlie, as always.
Enjoyed it.
It's a pleasure, and certainly hope you have a good rest of your weekend. Tune in next week to Money Talks. Thanks for being with us. Take care.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.